Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good afternoon. Welcome back to The Good Life. I'm Guy Bauer, and every Saturday, noon to 1 on KNSS, it's the lunch hour with Good Life Guy. And I hope you're geared up for the holiday weekend. You've provisioned up, and you don't have to be out driving around today. You have some great food and maybe some great beverage of choice, whether it's a Diet Pepsi or my wine of the week, Tate Family Winery's The Ball Buster. I just took a sip. The name is apropos. It's huge wine. My guests on the phone with right now from New York, Karen Page and Andrew Dornenberg. This couple has put together so many great books. All you must do, go to goodlifeguy.com, follow some of the links. Whether you go to their homepage, the official website, karenandandrew.com, or you look at them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you'll get the picture better than I can explain it, and you'll learn a lot. Okay, you guys. So many things I want to talk about, but first was the book. Let me see. Andrew, I want you to answer this question as a former chef.
Okay.
Was the book written specifically for a group? And when the two groups that I mentioned are the consumer home chef or, you know, the family kitchen, or for the prospective or current professional chef?
The book was written for everybody because I think everybody needs an idea sometimes. And the book is really just over 400 pages of idea starters. And that's really what the goal was, to make it really fun and accessible and something you can dip into. And actually, okay, so in one section, it's called an A to Z section. And we sort of give you all sorts of different ideas. But we also break down a chart of seasonality for each season. And today it's actually sort of rainy and gray, which is actually very pretty in New York, believe it or not. And I was sort of like, what am I going to do? We've been traveling. I need some ideas. And I looked up soup under winter dishes. And I'm like, oh, I can make a cauliflower soup, a pureed soup. I can make a bean soup. I can make a lentil soup. And so I went out shopping and picked up a bunch of vegetables just I'm going to make three different soups today. So that's it for the home cook. And I think for the professional chef, they might open it up and look into the history chapters and see how dishes have evolved over the years. But that's sort of fun for me to read, too, even from the home perspective. So really, we wrote the book for everyone. I mean, even a mom or a father coming home has to have an idea for dinner at 6:30 with, you know, the kids and making noise and everything. So we really just wanted to create a book that would give you the idea, not just a recipe, but like sometimes you're just sort of information overload in that moment. You're like, I got no ideas. And it's like, we want you to be able to pick up the book, thumb through it, as you said earlier. Within a couple of pages, you're going to find some inspiration, and that's what we want to do. So we give you the idea, and then if you want, you can pick up the flavor Bible and see what's in your house, what ingredients you're going to work with that night, and pull together a dish in minutes. So really, we wanted the book to be able to get everyone with a smile on their face going, oh, I didn't even think about that. And now you have the idea, and you're in the kitchen going.
Karen, this one's for you. This is not a recipe book, but there's so many things I was just thumbing through there going, oh. And I didn't even get back to the seasonality section. But one in 10 people, I think that's a number that I read in your book, don't enjoy cooking. Or one in 10 people enjoy cooking, and the rest considered a chore. And meanwhile, you guys are part of this massive movement that has made cookbooks and chefs so popular and famous. What is the disconnect?
Well, I think, you know, people have come to love watching the Food Network, the cooking shows that are on TV, and, you know, we've become sort of armchair chefs where we're looking to see what kind of ingredients get put together and how people in 30 minutes or less can come up with this amazing dish based on three ingredients that you would never think of putting together. And I think we have become a little intimidated and maybe over-glamorizing the chef's profession, thinking, well, it takes all that training and it takes all of that experience to be able to do something like that. I could never do that, is what I think 9 out of 10 home cooks say to themselves. And they get worried about the fact that if they don't have every single ingredient that's called for in a recipe that they read in the newspaper or a magazine or in a cookbook, that they won't be able to make the recipe. So I think what we wanted to do with Kitchen Creativity was really to inspire people who love, or people who want to be able to love cooking at home, to be able to walk into the kitchen and have the skills and the confidence to just open the refrigerator and open the cupboard and see what they have on hand, and to learn sort of the basic education that you need to know in order to be able to throw them together in a way that you'll end up with something delicious. And so what we start out in Kitchen Creativity is with what we call the Mastery Chapter, which is really a way for readers to get into the mindset of great chefs and to learn to think like a chef and how to cook like a chef, and which involves both shopping and seasoning like a chef. And we've got a list of 20 of the best recommended cookbooks that are on many of the best chefs' bookshelves, and that they think make up a fundamental education. And they include some books that you've probably already got, and your listeners have already got in their bookshelves, like Julia Child, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, or Joy of Cooking. But it's also got restaurant chefs' favorite books from other restaurant chefs, from really all across the country and around the world, that are really essential books that people can have on their shelves to learn the fundamentals. And beyond that, we've also got lists of some of the places that the best chefs in America shop. And so you can know where to get the exact right olive oil or the exact right vinegar that they turn to get that secret ingredient, that special touch to a dish that they're finishing off. So with some of these behind-the-scenes secrets, these are some of the things that every home cook can put to use, finding out what the favorite mustard brand is of leading chefs, or maple syrup, or salt for that matter, and to be able to use those to make their cooking, a whole league beyond what it was before. And this is all without having to rely on recipes.
Well, there's a quote in the earlier part of the book by the chef at Inc. in Los Angeles. And he talks about, you have to be excited about mashed potatoes or PB&J sandwich, whatever.
Exactly. That's Michael Voltaggio, who is a winner of Top Chef. And he talked about the fact that he loves our book, Culinary Artistry, and that was an inspiration to him, and that he really appreciates that frame of mind that you bring to a dish, whether it is a coq au vin, a chicken and wine dish, or whether it's a simple mashed potatoes. And you want to bring that same sense of respect and seriousness of purpose and dedication to whatever it is you're making in the kitchen, even a PB&J, and that is really what's going to make the dish between being something that is, that you're going to yawn over versus something that's really going to get you excited to be eating it. And, with even something as simple as a PB&J, we can use that as an example. I mean, it's just peanut butter, it's jelly, and it's bread. But what kind of bread are you using? Are you using a crappy bread that you wouldn't serve to your worst enemy? Or are you using a really wonderful bread that you've either made at home yourself or that you've gotten from a fine bakery as a basis of your sandwich? And then the peanut butter. Are you using the least expensive peanut butter in the market, or have you tasted a few different peanut butter brands to make sure that you're working with the peanut butter that is really a high quality, that has a wonderful peanut flavor, that you've really thought about it? And then the jelly, it could be a simple grocery store jelly. You can have home preserves. You can have go to the trouble of procuring a really fine jam or preserve. And so I think when you think about every element of a dish, even something as simple as a PB&J, you realize, wow, I can do that to mashed potatoes too. I'm going to think about what kind of potatoes I'm using. I'm going to think about what kind of whether I'm going to add cream or butter at all, or if I'm going to add something else to my mashed potatoes to make them special. You can deconstruct every element of what you typically put into a dish, and when you think about it and bring more care to it, you can really elevate it to a whole different level.
Well, and that, again, now what you're saying is just like many of the chefs that you guys had the privilege of interviewing, and you ran through the list of many of them. There's so many. I want to hear an opinion from both of you on what did you find the most relevant, thought-provoking, innovative comments or suggestions or technique from – boy, do I want to pin you down and ask you to pick a chef specifically. Maybe you can leave the chef's name out, but if you care to. But talking to this many people that work in this environment and have so much to offer, to get them to share with you had to be cool. But then, like I said, who impressed you the most?
Well, we've got literally dozens and dozens of chefs and their insights quoted in the book, and it's so hard to choose. And I think that's why we included them all, is because they all had something to offer from their different perspectives. And I think, again, that gets back to the reader. I think our ultimate goal is to encourage our reader to tap their own highest potential and to go within and to figure out, well, what is going to be most satisfying to me as a cook? Every time I walk into the kitchen, if I want to come up with something brilliant, like the world's most creative chefs do, what can I do? What can I tap from my own experience? And we actually have examples in the book where we're prompting the reader to take a minute and think about the five favorite dishes they had as a child. And something you and your listeners can do as well is thinking about, wow, what did I love eating as a kid? And that'll take us all back a really long way in some cases. And so Andrew and I did that exercise in the beginning of the creativity chapter, where I was remembering growing up in Michigan, which has the highest number of apple cider mills per capita of any state in the United States. And so I grew up eating caramel apples that were rolled in crushed peanuts. And I found that I love that combination of apple and caramel and peanuts. And what I came to realize as an adult, and that all of us can learn to tap, is that that combination of apple and caramel and peanuts is something that we can apply in a whole host of other ways in our kitchen today as adults. And so now when I go into the kitchen and I'm making a green salad, I might slice the apples and throw some sliced apples into my green salad. And instead of throwing in croutons, I might throw in a handful of peanuts instead for some crunch. And when I'm finishing off my vinaigrette, I might add a dash of caramel to it, so that by the time I'm sitting down to my salad, I'm actually having the flavor of caramel apple in my salad, which I know is good for me, but it's also delicious, and I'm enjoying them, those flavors of childhood as an adult at the table tonight. And that's something we can do if we're making a cocktail. You know, at this time of year, we might have some apple cider on hand. If you want to throw a dash of vodka into it, when you serve it in that martini glass, you can take that martini glass first and rim it with some melted caramel, and then roll the melted caramel rim into some crushed peanuts, and then pour the cocktail in, and you can enjoy those flavors and textures of a caramel apple while you're having a cocktail. And if you want to leave the vodka out, you can turn it into what we call a mocktail here in New York City.
There you go. You know, as you were talking, I teach food and wine pairing. I have one of the many classes that I teach at Wichita State University. And this section, you know, we're back there in the high 70s, low 80s of the book. And you just have page after page of sweet food and bitter food. And then the combinations, and looking at the bitter section, you know, you have bitter, fat, and salty. And then underneath that is things that fit that category. Broccoli with peanut oil and soy sauce kind of fit that. The bitter and sweet, dark chocolate and sugar. Bitter and sour. You said caramel. Bitter, salty, and sweet. And people go, what the heck is bitter, salty, and sweet? How could you make that work?
Good.
And I said, have you ever had a piece of candy that, you know, like chocolate, dark chocolate caramel with salt, sea salt on top. Oh,
exactly.
Yeah.
How great is that? And that, you know, one of the reasons that for those lists in the book is because we wanted to empower people when they're cooking with the recipe and they're thinking, oh, shoot, I don't have any lemon juice in the house. I'm going to have to throw away everything I started cooking with because I don't have lemon juice. What you can think about is, well, why is lemon juice an ingredient in the recipe? And when you realize, oh, it's meant to add sourness to the dish, what else could I use to add sourness? You can turn to the list in Kitchen Creativity, and there's a whole list of sour ingredients. There's a list of sweet ingredients, bitter ingredients, salty ingredients. And so when you're out of something, you can learn to feel more confident about substituting something else that will add the same taste profile to that dish. And so that will encourage you to be more confident in the kitchen for having the confidence to say, well, I'm going to add lime juice, or I'm going to add orange juice, or I'm going to add a mild vinegar. And you can play with some of those substitutions and I think end up with a whole new creative take on a dish.
Yeah. You know, I didn't do as good a job as I normally do of painting a word picture of the book, but part one is the creative process in the kitchen. Part two, a world of infinite culinary possibilities. The list, that's the A to Z section that Andrew mentioned. But give us a quick overview of the three stages.
Sure. We try to boil down the creative process, which of course is an impossibility because it's not a linear process. It's a process that's really much more cyclical, as any of us who've ever tried to create anything know. But it really does fall into three basic stages that sometimes will cycle back into one another. But stage one is mastery, which is really about acquiring the knowledge, skill, and control that you need in the kitchen. And so we've got a whole section that will set you up to be able to enter the kitchen with the same mindset of one of the world's most creative chefs. And then after that, we move into stage two, which is alchemy, which refers to converting the common into the precious. And all we mean by that is really leveraging the power of flavor affinities, which are topics that are discussed in our books, The Flavor Bible and What to Drink with What You Eat. How do you take one ingredient and make it taste better than you ever imagined it could taste by combining it with another ingredient that will enhance its flavor? So if we're talking about mushrooms, we might be talking about Pinot Noir in the glass next to the dish. Or if we're talking about tomatoes, we might be talking about basil, or we might be talking about oregano. Or it could be a cheese like Parmesan or mozzarella, for example. So really understanding what flavors work well together is one of the key secrets of leading chefs. And as chefs have told us, you know, it's not just a matter of taking two ingredients that you love and combining them, that you can be disappointed time and time again if you try to do that, which even a great chef like Dan Patterson from Qua in San Francisco told us, that you really need to understand what flavors work well together. And until Flavor Bible came around in 2008, there really hadn't been a book that you could turn to with the ease of consulting a dictionary or a thesaurus and just look up from A to Z to find out what are the herbs and spices and other seasonings that best enhance the flavor of any ingredient you'd ever want to cook with. So alchemy is really tapping that, the ideas that are in the Flavor Bible and What to Drink with What You Eat, and we give a whole in-depth exploration of that in that section of the book. And then finally, in Kitchen Creativity, we talk about creativity itself, which is the idea of making something that is new and valuable. And we go into lots of in-depth discussions with some of the world's most creative chefs about their best practices in the kitchen, how they think about tapping their senses to create something new. And really, one of the biggest surprises for us was realizing that it's not just their five, what we call outer senses that they tap, the senses of taste and smell, of course, and texture through touch and seeing and hearing, but also what we have termed the inner senses. Chefs, the greatest chefs, really do have these inner senses that they tap, and it's something that you too, any home cook, can do proactively by learning to tap Things like instinct, intuition, insight, imagination, and inspiration. And that these are the senses that really drive the creative process, which often is a matter of imagining some new creation that doesn't yet exist that you want to have. You know, a dish that you've enjoyed in the past, how can you bring it in a new incarnation? And so you're combining memory of things that you've enjoyed in the past with imagination, things that might exist in the future, and bringing it all together by going within. And chefs have talked to us about things that they do, whether it's going for a long run or a long bike ride, to really spend a lot of time in their mind mulling over ideas. Some of them, like Rick Bayless in Chicago, is actually a 20-year yoga practitioner who spends time in meditation in yoga class. Eric Repair of New York's Le Bernardin is also a very serious Tibetan Buddhist meditator who spells out his meditation practice. So lots of things you can do to go within. You can journal, you can write notes, and that will give you a chance to really think about all the influences you have and how you can turn them into something new.
Wow. I knew we wouldn't have enough time. Could you guys stay just for one more break, and then
sure.
I'll only keep you for a couple minutes after that?
Happy to.
Great. Quick break. We'll be back. Talk more. Now, if we can't explain to you how cool this book is in the 45 minutes we've been speaking about it, well, then you got to have a copy, because then you'll know and you'll say, wow, he was right. It's called Kitchen Creativity, Unlocking Culinary Genius with Wisdom, Inspiration, and Ideas from the World's Most Creative Chefs and the World's Most Creative Cookbook Authors. I added this part, Karen Page and Andrew Dornenberg. All you're going to do is be caller number 5, the number 316-869-1330. Call now. We'll give you a copy.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.